Well, next up on the High Velocity Radio Show is the incoming executive director for the Cobb Symphony Orchestra, Mr. Bob Sanna, and the conductor for the Cobb Symphony Orchestra, Mr. Mike Alexander. Welcome to the show, Bob and Mike.
Hi. Well, I want to begin by alluding to something that you said, Stone, when we first met a few minutes ago about us Northerners having a funny accent. And I've forgiven you for that. And what I'd like to do now is thank you guys very much for inviting us here today.
You're more than welcome, Hoss. Who's your NASCAR driver, by the way?
I really don't have one.
Imagine that. So yeah. Tell us a little bit, Bob. Somehow they conned you into taking over this organization. What in the world were you thinking? And what kind of plans do you have for CSO in the coming year?
Sure. My wife and I moved to Marietta, Georgia, about 6 years ago. And we were walking through the square one evening and saw a wonderful wine and cheese party going on in a new wine shop. So we were peering in through the window and wishing that we had been invited, and the door flung open and some nice folks inside invited us in. And it happened to be an organization called the Friends of the Cobb Symphony Orchestra. Wonderful group of people. And when they learned about our involvement with the New York Philharmonic up in New York, they asked us if we would enjoy joining the Friends, and we had done that. I guess it's going on almost about 5 or 6 years now, and we were introduced to many fine concerts and the folks of the Friends, and also the affiliated people with the orchestra. And we were very impressed with it and taken with the people and the quality of the Cobb Symphony Orchestra. So through that acquaintance, got to meet this fellow over here to my left, Todd Youngblood, who chairs the Cobb Symphony Orchestra. And they were having a search for a new executive director to replace the one who had just left for San Obispo, California. And Todd asked me if I would consider accepting the role as the executive director. And I hesitated, and he said, "Don't say no, just say maybe." And
said, that, well, that young blood can sell, can't he?
Yeah, you know, he's a master at it. So I had considered it and spoke with my wife Carol about it, and she said, "Let's go. Let's lend a hand." And that's what we hope to do. Mike Alexander, sitting right next to me here, is just a wonderful conductor and music director. And Todd and Mike and I will be working very closely to promote the Cobb Symphony Orchestra and get it the recognition that it really deserves. Because I know Mike doesn't like me to say this. He may feel that I overstate things a little, but I truly believe that they're a world-class orchestra. And what we're going to try to do is build audience, get them greater recognition and support.
Well, you kind of listed just at the end there a couple of the key challenges, but I'd love for you to kind of go into a little more detail. I mean, what are your biggest priorities and your challenges for the next 12 months?
Well, we feel that we have to put a strategic plan in place, which we've already begun to do a major promotion for the orchestra, because unfortunately, it's virtually unknown outside of Marietta, Georgia. And that will be our first thrust, and we do have some exciting plans to move forward with that shortly.
I suspect fundraising is always a challenge.
Fundraising is probably the top priority that we have, and of course, a building audience, and also recruiting more supporters for the orchestra.
Well, our producer Lee Cantor is loaded, and he likes good music, so you're welcome.
Okay, Lee. I'll take your phone number after the show.
So, Mike, let's get a little bit from your perspective. I know that you've got a lot going on, and you are the one that is responsible for this world-class sound that Bob's bragging about. Give us a little insight into the CSO from your perspective.
Well, first of all, we're incredibly excited to have Bob on board. And while he may overstate just a bit about the orchestra, it's really an amazing group of people. And the orchestra is quite unique, really, across the world. It's a professional ensemble that, when it plays with sort of a, I'm not sure how to explain this in any other way, it's kind of with the chip on its shoulder. It has a, there is a true hunger to be able to really connect what we do to our audience. And the whole approach, the concept of an orchestra, is unique among orchestras, certainly in this country, in that we really put outreach and education first in what we do. So we push the envelope, we do pieces in art that is unusual for an orchestra of our size to be able to produce. And we also combine that by an amazing amount of outreach. So we host the George Youth Symphony Orchestra, which is in Chorus, which is the largest youth orchestra program in the Southeast, over 400 students. We have a CSO chorus with over 100 members, and really a private lesson program to the Georgia Center of the Arts. So for an organization our size, we act as if we have a budget about 5 to 6 times what we actually do, what we produce artistically, which makes it a pretty exciting place for a music director to work. And we're incredibly excited to have Bob on board now to be able to have the administrative side keep pace, really, with what's happening on that side.
I've had some exposure to the Youth Symphony Orchestra. That's a phenomenal organization, and that's doing some amazing things in the Cobb community.
Yeah, we're really proud that we have, you know, from all across the metro area, actually, that we get students. We have people come as far away as the North Carolina border and as far south, as pretty far south of Atlanta. It's pretty invigorating to see the work that they produce is really quite unbelievable. And it's neat to be able to pair that with the professional orchestra. So to see them work side by side, to see the professional musicians come into work with the youth musicians is a really powerful thing.
Tell us more about the professional orchestra. Do any of your ensemble participate in the ASO, or are they completely loyal to your orchestra?
Our orchestra is we get the top freelance players in Atlanta, freelance musicians. We're very proud, actually, that our musicians play with the Atlanta Symphony. It's a mark of excellence for us, actually, that they our musicians have actually been hired permanently by the Atlanta Symphony, in addition to some pretty amazing orchestras like the Queen of Sophia Orchestra in Spain. Several major orchestras across the world have hired our musicians, and that's actually something that we're really proud of, that we're able to attract that good a musician, that while we may not be able to keep them forever, we're getting them at a time sort of as they're on the rise.
Well, and you have a jazz group as well. That's how I was first introduced to your organization, is I had a chance to see a jazz concert. Tell us a little bit about that, if you will.
Yeah, you know, we're sort of redefining what it means to be a symphony orchestra. When you think of symphony orchestra, you often think of, traditionally what a symphony orchestra is. And we've sort of shifted that model. And we thought, if we're a musical organization in the United States, it's really impossible for us to not have jazz be a part of what we do. And so Sam Skelton, who's one of the leading jazz musicians in Atlanta, took the model of jazz at Lincoln Center in New York. And we took in the top jazz musicians in Atlanta, and they actually rehearse. Which is kind of a strange thing, but to have jazz musicians actually sit down and rehearse together is normally they just make it up as they go along. And what the result of that is staggering, and they are unbelievable. And to go to a CSO jazz concert is pretty spectacular.
Because I've always read that the cool thing about jazz is the improvisation about it.
So yeah, now they do improvise.
To hear that.
Yeah, they do improvise, but you know, and boy, do they improvise. I mean, when they play, they can really go. But the charts that they're playing are not not for the weak at heart. I mean, there's some. It's amazing they can do what they do on the number rehearsal. Most people are always surprised. You know, they rehearse twice. The Cobb Symphony rehearses 2 or 3 times. Maybe, you know, most people are always surprised. I think if you grew up in school music, you're used to a lot of rehearsals before you do a concert. And one of the things that's unique about professional music is that the rehearsal process is really quick. So it adds a little excitement to what we do.
Well, Bob, those of us down on this side of the Mason-Dixon, as a general rule, don't care how you did it up there. But I think there may be some wisdom and merit in capitalizing on some of what you learned with the Philharmonic. What are some things that you were exposed to when you were in that arena that might serve you well down here?
Well, I was I was the president of an advertising agency up there, and always a lover of the arts, and had attended some concerts up there of the New York Philharmonic, which were given free at a major state park on Long Island called Heckscher State Park. And the folks who sponsored it were running low on capital to pay the band, and I was asked if I could think of some ideas to promote it and raise some funds through my advertising agency. Excuse me. So what we did was we drew upon the people in the metropolitan New York area from the media to support us and contribute free pages in major publications, the regional issues of national magazines, many of them, the local TV stations to help us produce TV commercials for the orchestra to get garner support and more financial backing for the orchestra. National Public Radio was very generous in joining us and becoming a member of a committee that I started called the New York Philharmonic Free Concert Committee of Long Island. And
that's a really long acronym.
Yeah, it sure is. And it worked wonderfully, and the people were wonderful that contributed to it. And that media exposure really led us to a lot of other supporters, very generous and major supporters, I might add, like the Chase Manhattan Bank and the New York Times and many, many others. Symbol Technologies, the folks who invented and held most of the patents on the barcodes in the world. It worked like a charm, and I hope to employ some of those things down here, some of those skills that I learned from that experience down here to garner support for these wonderful, wonderful people. And so far, I'm so impressed with the quality of the people that have come forth and volunteered to help with that effort.
Well, the quality of the organization, the quality of the music is not within not. There's no question about that. The biggest challenge you guys have is exposure. Is that not, people just don't know about it. And how you one of the ways you deal with that is obviously fundraising. So let's talk a little bit more about that. I think this is your all 60th or going to be your 60th anniversary season. So you got a program called 60 for 60. Tell us a little bit more about that and how people can contribute to that.
Well, first of all, we have the idea for our 60th anniversary to raise $60,000 through increments of 60. Donations. So if one person wants to give us $60,000, we'll just end the campaign and
right.
be set
right.
to go. But really, we're looking for 1,000 people to donate $60. We're looking for ways on all sides. And one of the things that we're so excited about Bob coming on board is that he knows what good is and has connections in an organization much larger than us with the New York Philharmonic to help us get to that level. But we find that we not only do we need the large sponsors, corporate and individual, but we also need a way for people who you know, maybe can only give $60 to feel like they're really being a part of what we do. And so that's the idea for the 60 for 60. It's pretty exciting. There's one of the things that's so neat about the Cobb Symphony is there's a real grassroots connection to it. And our audience size is exploding, actually. We're against all the norms of our industry, which tends to be shrinking, we are accelerating like crazy. And so now it's just a question, as you say, of being able to find opportunities for both sides to meet in the middle.
You really do have offerings for all age groups, all kinds of demographics. Walk us through some of the programming for the upcoming year, if you would.
We've got some really great things that are happening. First of all, one of the things you have to understand about the Cobb Symphony Orchestra is that we'll do just about anything. And our audience sort of has a kind of a neat contract with us, I think, when they come in. We're going to challenge you and push you and make you rethink about what a symphony orchestra is and the kind of music that you'd come to hear. We're going to do some of the standard classics that is part of our repertoire and a lot of new music. And we do a lot to explain to you when you come to the concert, what it is you're hearing, why this music, both new and old, is important to be played. So this year we're going to do some pretty diverse things. Our first concert, just for example, a piece by Christopher Theofanidis, one of the new great composers in the United States today. We're going to do a piece that is called Rainbow Body. We're going to combine that with the New World Symphony by Dvorak and then the Schumann Piano Concerto with Roberto Plano from Italy, who's flying in to play the concerto with us. We get world-class guest artists to come in, which is also a really exciting thing about the symphony. Our CSO chorus will join us several times throughout the year. Some really unusual works, Stravinsky's Mass, Bernstein's Chichester Psalms, Bach Magnificat, which is not so unusual, but very cool. And then we're going to end the year with Mozart's Requiem, which is one of the most controversial works in classical music, if there's such a thing. And we're going to combine that with all kinds of cool stuff throughout the year, music by Shostakovich, Rachmaninoff, all of your favorites.
So when Simon and Lee want to make a donation, what's the best way to go about doing that? Can they get online and do that? Do they call you? Do they call Bob? How's that work?
Well, they could call the Cobb Symphony Orchestra in Marietta at 770-429-7016. Or they could reach us through our website, which is www.cobbsymphony.com.
And if they call, they'll get a chance maybe to speak with Susan Stinlin. Is that right?
That's who they'll be speaking with. That's right.
Oh, she's an absolute delight. I know when I got my season tickets, we got our season tickets for the High Velocity Radio show. One of the nice things is, I mean, they really work with you, too, on you might buy the package for the Saturday evening performance, but if the schedule changes, family comes into town, they'll work with you and get you seated at a different performance, get you additional tickets. I mean, she and that whole organization are just an absolute delight to work with. They're great.
Yes, it's a great team. And also, if anyone cares to join the Friends of the Cobb Symphony Orchestra, and it's a great group of people, consists of about 100 people, broken into various committees that do helpful things for the orchestra, try to build audience, host receptions, and have a lot of fun doing those things. They could also reach us by calling Susan Stenslin at that same number.
And what if we want to get our kids involved? Because I know you've got the Youth Symphony Orchestra, but you've also got things that are appropriate, perfectly appropriate, to bring your kid to on a Saturday. Tell us more about that, Mike.
Yeah, I guess what I would say, you know, all of our programs are family friendly. And in fact, I would agree, you know, we are also sort of bucking the trends of our industry in that our audience is not very gray. We have a pretty young and I think hip audience. And we go out of our way to do that, to try to appeal to that age group. I think what I would encourage people to do is just come check out a program. One of the things that we found, which is pretty exciting, we had a consulting group help us out to sort of analyze our numbers. And one of the things they found out is that people who come to a concert constantly the first time almost always come back, which is a really good sign for us. So if you have a young person that you want to talk to about the symphony or expose them to great music, this would be the way to do it.
Well, I think the educational component to what you're doing is a big part of that. And yeah, you listed off a lot of music and a lot of composers and all that, and a lot of people, honestly, in the marketplace don't really know about that. Yeah. So that educational component to it, and making it kind of fun and exciting and telling a story behind that music.
Yeah, and it goes right down to everything that we do. Like, you know, with the youth orchestra, I mean, our youth orchestra program is different than a lot of youth orchestra programs, and then it's not exclusive. Now, our top group is pretty amazing as a result of the fact that we have over 400 kids in the program. So over time, those kids move up to the program, we educate them, and they become quite good, in fact, spectacular at the top end. But we'll also take someone who maybe doesn't feel that, you know, doesn't have enormous talent, but loves what they do, want to find out more about it. We want to find a place for those people to be able to make music and to love music.
It's one thing to hear a beautiful piece of music. It's another thing to know the story behind it and what was going on in the composer's
Absolutely.
Life and whether he was in war or
just
lost his love. And it's just that changes the whole character of the piece.
I always tell people, you know, I feel like a stand-up comedian and as kind of in the way when I conduct, and I know all the jokes. So I've spent a year studying a piece of music before I conduct it, and the audience, unfortunately, maybe if they get to their seats 2 minutes early, read the program notes. So what we try to do is to connect you so that you understand what it is that we're hearing, why it is that we love this music.
Well, I can tell you from my perspective, as an audience member who is less than knowledgeable about music in this arena, from the George Jones, Merle Haggard demographic, it's so wonderful because you don't feel intimidated, and it's an approachable performance. And Mike comes out, or one of the other people come out, and they give you a little background on the piece, and it makes it a very pleasant experience, so that someone like me really can watch NASCAR at 1 and then enjoy the symphony at 6.
And we love that connection, actually. It's not often that Symphony Orchestra and NASCAR meet, but if there's a way for it to happen in the Cubs Symphony Orchestra, that would be that's really what we're about. We want someone to show up who has absolutely nothing, no history of classical music knowledge at all, come to one of our performances and become an arts patron. And to us, that we consider a huge success when that happens, because that's what we're about. And really, frankly, there is no difference. I mean, you know, other than turning left all the time, I don't quite understand the fascination with NASCAR, but I can understand the passion that people have for the sport. And I think it's the same thing with classical music. It's once you're hooked, you're hooked. And in classical music, we turn left and right, so it's interesting.
I don't want to speak out of school here, and I don't want to start any kind of a battle, but I see that as the difference between you and, say, the ASO. I don't know if they necessarily are courting that demographic of people. Maybe they're the more traditional experience, which there's people that want that.
Exactly, and I think that's the key thing here, is that we win when the ASO wins. So it's what we want. In essence, we're a gateway, I think, organization, where the ASO is... if you're musically knowledgeable, they're absolutely stunning. I mean, what an orchestra. I mean, they're incredible, and they've done so many innovative and great things. And really, what we're doing, in a way, is creating an audience that will not only come to the Cobb Symphony for years and years, but will also come to the ASO for years and years. And we're able to do that because we're able to create a really intimate experience, in a way, when you come in to hear us. So the main thing we get from people, if they come to us into the Atlanta Symphony, they always tell us, it feels so exciting to come to a Cobb Symphony concert. And the reason is what they're feeling is the energy that we and the passion behind what we put in behind we do. So you're right, yeah.
Well, we still have 3.5 minutes, and it's my show, so I'm staying with this NASCAR thing for a minute. What if you position some of these musicians? I mean, one thing they do a great job of in NASCAR, you got to admit, whether you're a fan or not, is the marketing. And people have their driver, and they will fight you to the death over the driver. I mean, could you have a musician that had a presence like that, and people follow a musician, they've got a trading card, and they do interviews, and they talk about their instrument? You think I'm crazy?
Yeah. Are you suggesting you want them to drink Coke, you know, when they're
I'm
solo?
I'm saying that it might be cool if you had like the off track, the off stage interview, you know, with the guy, or they were real accessible and they were out in the lobby and they had their following. I got to believe there's some parallels that you could.
We do that, actually. It's funny that you mentioned that. We make a I tell the orchestra all the time, they kind of laugh at me, but you know, I'm out accessible in between, before and after the performances. Our musicians actually come out in intermission to talk to the audience. We encourage our musicians to do that, that there's not that wall there, which I have to say, the one thing I have the ultimate respect for NASCAR for is that you're right. Those drivers they're really accessible. Classical music can learn a lot from that. I think one of the things about classical music, it's funny that we hired Bob, because I was joking with him when we hired him. I personally believe that classical music has perhaps the worst marketing history in the world today. We're terrible at marketing our product. And so we have to get better. There's a huge disconnect between what we actually do and what people think we do. And so that's why I think we're so successful when people actually come to a concert. In that way, we could certainly learn from NASCAR.
Well, what Stone's really getting at, gentlemen, is that he wants to put a high-velocity radio decal on every instrument.
I do. On the fiddle, well, you call them violins, but I want a HVR decal on all the fiddles, or at least the first chair. Well, this has been a lot of fun for me. I don't know if you got anything out of it at all, but I think our listeners will enjoy at least listening to what you guys had to say about the CSO. You heard us in our last interview. We do have a little tradition here on the show. We'd like to ask our guests, if they would, to share a mistake that they've made in their career and what they feel like they learned from it. Could we get each of you to do that? And we'll start with you, Bob. You're a little longer in the tooth. You might have more to draw on.
Well, I gave that some thought, and a little experience of mine came to mind that I'd like to relate to you. I chaired the New York Philharmonic Orchestra Free Concert Committee for 10 years up north, and in the first year, as the chair, I was asked if given the honor of introducing the orchestra and Kurt Mazur to an audience of 50 or 60,000 people live at Heckscher State Park. And that was a pretty intimidating thing for me. As a matter of fact, I practiced in front of the mirror that morning while I was shaving, saying a few very simple words over and over. I was truly getting ill, thinking that I would have to get up in front of 50 or 60,000 people and do this. Well, the time came, and I got up to the microphone on the stage, and there they were, as far as you could see, in every direction, all those people. And I thanked all of the sponsors and the supporters that that lent themselves and their talents and their organizations and their money to have this thing happen that first year. And then I went on to say, and now, ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure to introduce Kurt Mazur and the New York Philharmonica Orchestra. And I just couldn't retrieve that A that I put on there. As much as I reached out and tried to pull it back, it wasn't coming back. And the crowd was very polite. They didn't laugh at me. And
like we did.
Yes. And as I was leaving the stage, I was making my way back to my seat and saying, excuse me, as I was moving into my seat, completely mortified. And my business partner, Bob Mattson, tapped me on the shoulder as I said, excuse me, to get past him. And he said, excuse me, Bob. And I turned around and I said, yes, Bob. He said, for your information, there are no harmonicas in that orchestra. So I don't know if I learned anything from that.
That's great. How are you going to follow that story, Mike?
That's hard. I don't know. Yeah. Luckily, I haven't made it in front of that many people. But the one thing that leaps to mind that I'll never forget is we were working with Christina Smith, who's actually the principal flute in the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra, who's an amazing, amazing flute player, one of the best in the world. And she was going to solo with our youth orchestra. And we talked about a piece she was going to solo with, and with an artist like that, you get one rehearsal. We got to the rehearsal and realized that that we both had mentioned a concerto. I didn't realize there were two concertos by the same composer for flute. She brought one, we brought the other, and showed up to the rehearsal with the wrong piece. Now, luckily, she was a good enough musician that she just said, fine, I'll just play the concerto that you've been working on.
It's called talent, right?
It was pretty, and actually, it was kind of neat to see the kids in that regard, because they looked at her like she was from Mars, because to be able to just, you know, play a concerto that she'd not seen before on the spot was pretty amazing.
That is talent and grace, you know, for her to do it that way.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Oh, what a great show. That was fun. Todd, you learn anything?
I learned a few things today, yeah. Yeah. Not to speak in front of 60,000 people. That's what I learned from that story.
Well, I'm glad we had you guys on from the CSO as well. Hope you'll come back and let us know how many millions you've raised during the year.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
You are more than welcome.
Thank you.
You are more than welcome, Mr. Santa. Well, until next time, this is Stone Payton, Todd Schnick, Simon Engo from GMT Corporation, Bob Santa, and Mike Alexander from the Cobb Symphony Orchestra, our producer Lee Cantor, our buddy Max Cantor, and everyone here at the Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.